All right. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yep.
All right, cool. My name is Georgie Cohen. I'm from Tufts University. This is Bargain Bin MoMA content curation for the rest of us. Thanks for coming. Just a couple things. If you are tweeting about this, please use the double hashtag HUF10 and TNT, TNT being the content track short code thing. And if you have any questions during the presentation, feel free to raise your hand, and we'll set aside a moment to take those. So one thing I just want to sort of clarify to start is that if you're looking to the idea of content curation as the solution for a content creation problem, content curation is not a replacement for content creation. Creating original content is still the most important thing that you can do for your website. But what we're going to talk about is a way to unearth content buried treasure that you find that aligns with your brand. It's about taking advantage of user-generated content, taking advantage of the real-time web, to dig up content that aligns with the brand messages and the brand storytelling that you're trying to do. So the reason I'm up here talking about this is about a little more than a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I was monitoring monitoring Tufts via social media. Who here manages their university's brand or monitors via social media? Any sort of listening or dashboard? Okay. So I was doing that, and I was seeing all this content out there. I was seeing students creating videos, alums writing blogs about doing amazing things, and I thought, this is great stuff. I need to do something with this. So I started a blog. Started a blog in August 2009 called Jumble. Our mascot is Jumbo the elephant, haha. And basically what I called the blog is that we find the best stuff about Tufts on the web and post it here. That's exactly what the text says on the website. And I liken it to being the boing boing of Tufts. Anyone read Boing Boing? Just sort of, gathers the best stuff on the web. So Jumble is kind of a subset of Boing Boing. It's very Tufts specific. And in a year from August 09 to August 10, we had 36,000 visitors. And it became a real home for a lot of this cool content that our community was creating that organically aligned with our brand messages that we want to convey about the university. So, here's some of the content that we had. We had a professor in our School of Dental Medicine who did a rap about stem cell research and posted it on YouTube. So we found that, linked that up. It was hugely popular. This is an alum. His name is Michael Sheely. He's one of the co-founders of Runkeeper. Anyone use Runkeeper out here? So Michael Sheely, he's an alum. He co-founded this popular iPhone app called Runkeeper. And Robert Scoble, the prominent blogger, did a video interview with him. And this is our student group, Tufts Dance Collective, did their spring show, and they had a faculty dance, and the president Bacow of the university and his wife participated. And you can't see the Facebook like and the Twitter stats on this, but we had 43 retweets and 15 likes on Facebook via the blog entry. So that was some great content that was pretty popular. So I didn't really know what I was doing, right? All I saw was I saw content, and I'm like, I need to put it somewhere so I could highlight it because it's awesome. So I didn't really know until relatively recently that I was doing something that has a name called content curation. So you may think of the word curation in the context of a museum, right? Where you gather art around a theme or an era or from a particular artist. But think about a department store window, right? A department store window highlights fashion that is relevant to the season. It's the best clothes that they have to show you. And it's specific. They select specific items that coordinate with each other. So that's a kind of curation as well. And even Icon Has Cheeseburger is a form of curation because you have users submitting lolcats and the community curates them. They vote and they highlight which ones are the best. And the community is doing the curating of selecting the ones that are the best and the ones that they want to highlight. And again, Boing Boing and sites like Boing Boing and FARC, they highlight the best content on the web. FARC, highlights and curates the most curious in news and oddities. Boing Boing, just highlights a lot of the coolest stuff on the web. So the old model is aggregation. Does anyone watch Hoarders? So that's kind of the old model. It's like you just gather a bunch of stuff together that may have some sort of loose common thread. And you're like, here it is. Here's a bunch of stuff. But that doesn't really work anymore. There's too much content out there. And our users are demanding too much for us to just throw a bunch of stuff at them. It doesn't work anymore. It's an old model. This is the new model, which is curation. So let's dig a little deeper and find out what exactly curation is. Anne Hanley from Marketing Products has a definition that I really like, which is that curation is the act of continually identifying, selecting, and sharing the best and most relevant online content and other online resources on a specific subject to match the needs of a specific audience. To me, the three key words in that definition are it's the best, it's the most relevant, and it's specific. And that's just like the department store window that we talked about. But a shorter definition that I also really like is that curation is managing voices. And these voices are the ones that are out there in our community, our students, our alums, our staff, our faculty, who are creating content, much of which organically aligns with our brand. I mean, they're not sitting at their computer saying, I'm going to create content that aligns with the university brand. They're just sitting there saying, I really like the a cappella groups. I love the history department. I love being an alum. I'm going to blog about it. I'm going to shoot a video alum outing. And that's what they're doing. So what we can do through curation is raise the visibility of that content, build bridges to it, and identify the people out in our community who are the content influencers, our brand ambassadors, creating content on the web. And here's another sort of insight that I liked about content curation from the CEO of a company called HiFire, which makes a curating software called Curata. He says that for smaller organizations that do not have the time or manpower to compete with larger companies that are producing new content, curation levels the playing field. So, like I said, content curation is not a replacement for creating original content. You can't bank an entire content strategy on it. But if you're short on resources, if you're churning out news articles but you just don't have the resources to do video, maybe you can go out there and find the best videos that other people are creating about your brand or that tie into your message and highlight those. So it can supplement what you're doing in other areas. So let's go over some of the key points of content curation. Content curation happens in real time. Content is being created in real time. It's just happening. To take advantage of it, you have to have your finger on the pulse of what's going on, and hopefully a lot of us already do. You have to apply a human filter. We'll talk a little bit more about context in a second, but really having criteria for what you want to accomplish with curation, having some sort of purpose behind it, having a reason for why you're selecting the content that you're selecting is critical. That's what differentiates this from aggregation, which is sort of a machine-based robotic process. This is about being human. Having a blend of content. It's not just about videos or just about blog entries. It's not just about content that your community is creating. It could be content from your own news archives. It could be content from newsletters that your other departments at your university are creating. There's a whole sort of sea of content out there. And it's about mixing and matching and finding all whatever it is out there from whatever the source is that ties into the goal that you're trying to accomplish, the message that you're trying to convey. Publishing is really important. You have to have a home for when you're curating content, whether it's a blog, whether it's a topic landing page on a news site, whether it's something as simple as a Twitter list. You have to have some place where this all lives, because what we're doing with curation, with real-time content, is capturing it. We're capturing these moments that people are creating, and we're tying it down to our brand, aligning it, and having it live on for posterity. So having some place where it lives, some place where you can organize it, tag it, categorize it, whatever, and have that, give it that visibility is important. And the other important thing is community. We're reaching out to people who, like I said, are brand ambassadors, people who are really just jazzed about our university, about our brand, and creating content around it. And it's not just about, you know, stealing it and embedding it on your blog. It's about building relationships. These could be your future student interns. These could be, you know, alums who are out in the community who become your next, you know, young alumni ambassadors. Like, who knows who these people are going to be? Content could be the bridge that builds a relationship between you and this audience. So it sounds great, right? This sounds like utopia. It's like, oh my God, they're all going to create content for me. It's going to be great. I'm going to have a blog. It's awesome. But I have a lot to do, right? We all have other responsibilities. We have other stuff going on. Why should this be something that I consider working into my daily routine? Because there is so much content out there. there is tons and tons of content. These are the recent numbers I could find, and they probably are already out of date. So what we can do is help filter the chaos, because content is chaos. So if we filter the chaos, try to find the best of the best, the most specific, the most relevant, and highlight it, we can gain authority. You know, it seems kind of silly to say that you have to become a thought leader on your own brand, but you kind of do, because everyone else is already out there creating content around it as well. So if we go and out there and bring that in and give it a place and give it visibility, you know, it even elevates us even further. So, you know, go out there and find that content that aligns with your brand and give it a home. Like I said, this is already out there. This is a video that students produced after our lacrosse team won the national championship last year. We weren't going to do this video. We didn't have the resources to do this, but they were there on the field capturing the moment of the victory. So why not? Why aren't we going to highlight the heck out of this? This is amazing content. I don't care that I didn't create it. I just care that it's there. And also, students want it. The expectations report from Noel Levitz released this summer. What videos are most valuable to students? 26% said videos made by students, but 67% said videos made by both. And then, of course, just 7% said videos made by the college. Students want to see the content created by their peers. They want to see that alongside the stuff we're doing, too, which speaks to the point of having a blended approach to content curation. Does anyone read Groundswell? So Charlene Lee is the author of this really awesome book called Groundswell, and she created something called the engagement pyramid, which is a way of looking at the social demographics of your audience. At the very top of the pyramid is curation. Curation is the highest level of content engagement. You're taking the people who are the watchers, the sharers, the commenters, and the producers, and you're sort of taking advantage of all of that. You're mindful of all of it. You're highlighting the best of it. It takes time, it takes investment, but it's the highest level of content engagement that you can achieve. The good news is that we already do this in some places. And again, just like I was doing with Jumble, you may not know that you're approaching content in this mindset, but in a lot of ways we already are. Anyone do like media relations, working on a news site? So if you're highlighting the press clips that your university is getting in the New York Times or the Washington Post or wherever, you're already doing it a little bit. You're looking at the content that's out there that's relevant to your brand, highlighting the best of it and featuring it on your website. That's the kind of content curation. And university homepage might be one of the, you might not think of it that way, but again, that is a form of content curation, whichever side of the diagram you might fall on. That's also a place where you're selecting what's the best, what's the most specific to what I'm trying to accomplish, what's the most relevant to my audience. So speaking of that, we're going to talk a little bit about the strategy to use when you're thinking about curating content. Again, what is your goal? What are you trying to accomplish by doing this? You can't just sort of willy-nilly dive in, get a bunch of stuff, you hear some stuff. You have to know what you're trying to accomplish so you can measure it. Who is your audience? Who is this geared to? Is this geared towards students? Is this geared towards alums? Is this an internal audience, external audience? These are the questions to go through. What is the message you're trying to convey? What is the story that you're trying to tell? What tone are you telling this story in? And this speaks to the value of being human. Zombies don't tell stories, right? And aggregation is the product of zombies. It's just little robots sort of churning out content, looking for brains, stumbling around. Being human is the most valuable asset to curating content because you give content meaning, you give content context. So don't be afraid to be the editor of the New York Times, right? Don't be afraid to find the best stuff. Don't be afraid to be selective. It's your job as a curator of content to editorialize, to contextualize, to find the content that is out there and give it meaning. I think that context is really the most important thing that you can provide to content as a curator. Steve Rosenbaum is a guy who's done a lot of thinking and talking about this topic of content curation, and I really like the way he puts it. We've arrived in a world where everyone is a content creator, and quality content is determined by context. So what do I mean by context? That could be if you find the video of the a cappella group, singing at, you know, last Friday's show, you link to their website, you link to their Twitter account. You say that they also happen to have a show coming up next week or that they just won this award. So that little nugget of content, be it the video or the blog post or whatever, you provide the context of a more holistic picture of what's going on with that a cappella group, where they've been, where they're going, why this is important. And that's the value that you provide as a curator. Trust is critical when it comes to content curation, because we are universities, and people look up to us. They don't expect us to screw up, they expect us to get it right. As it said in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. So, you know, there's the saying that one rotten apple spoils the barrel, one red Solo cup spoils the video. So if you're reviewing content that's out there, make sure that you review it thoroughly, that you validate it as much as possible, because I've come across really great content that 2 minutes into the video, there's some drunken carousing going on, and you're like, I am not going to highlight that. Amazing as the rest of the message and the content in this video is, there's that, you know, sort of moment that I don't want to be associated with. Will it blend? Yes, it will blend. Mix up your content. Bring it in from different sources. Don't feel like you just, even if you're doing mostly videos, if you find tweets, if you find blog posts, if student groups on their websites have content or student blogs, that's okay. Whatever you're comfortable with from your, where you're sitting administratively or whatever, go for it. Mix it up. That's what makes it really interesting for the audience that you're trying to communicate with. Reaching out to your community is really important. There are those digital influencers out there, and they're the ones who are telling our brand story for us. Content curation is a lot about relationship building, like I said. It's about identifying those people, giving visibility to their content, building bridges to it through our curation mechanisms. And it's also about recognizing that the content your community creates may be better than something you come up with. It's about a little bit of humility also. We have a Quidditch team on campus. And we found out about this Quidditch team, and we're like, this is great. We're gonna do a video, little video about them. It's gonna be really fun, it'll be cool. So we're doing the usual emailing the student, oh, we'd like to profile you, oh, when is your practice? Oh, I'm a student, I'm very busy, I can't get back to you, I'm very flaky. And so it just went on. And then one day, I looked in my feed, saw this video that they had done promoting the Quidditch team, and it was cute, and it was adorable, and it was funny, and it was authentic. A little bit long, 4.5 minutes, but that's okay. And immediately, I said to myself, well, let's scrap our plans. We don't need to pursue that video anymore with those students, because they did the job for us, and they did it way better than we could have ever done, because it's in their voice. We can do a lot of things. We have some resources. We can do some stuff, but one thing we can't do is speak authentically as a student, because we're not students. We can't necessarily speak authentically as alums, because a lot of us aren't alums. So when that content appears and you find it, take advantage of it. Build those bridges to it. And be original. To the point from the e-expectations survey, this can live alongside your original content. If we did a written story about the Quidditch team, embed the video that they produce. Mix it up. Don't stop being original, because you can curate the best content in the world, but if you're not creating, if you're not putting something out there, you're quickly going to start falling off the slope. And again, to the point about organizing and tagging and making sure that wherever you had this content live, it's organized. This is going to live on for posterity. We're capturing those moments and pinning them down. So to do that properly, we have to do that in an organized fashion. So how do you find this stuff, right? We're talking about this sort of wealth of content that exists out there, organically aligned with our brand. How do you find it? So this is my social media monitoring dashboard. It's Google Reader. What's great is that there's so many sites, Twitter, Flickr, YouTube, where you can just pull in an RSS feed for whatever keyword you want. Google blog alerts. Well, I don't know if Technorati is really relevant anymore, but wherever else. And just pull it in. And so anything that comes across that has Tufts in it, I see. Which means that I also see a lot of stuff about grass and dog fur. But amidst all that stuff is really, really great content. I've seen some nice pictures of fields and puppies too. But So Flickr photo pools, I keep bad-mouthing aggregation, but the one thing that aggregation can do is serve as a platform for curation. Something like a photo pool, here's one from Northern Illinois University, where you have people upload their photos and add them to a pool, is great. This just creates sort of a sitting ducks of content waiting for you to sort of go like this one and that one and that one. Anyone read Bostonist, Gothamist, Chicagoist, any of those sort of city blogs? What they do often is they have a photo pool, and photographers in those cities take photos, submit them to the Flickr pool, and then the editors of the blog will highlight, either it's daily or weekly, I'm not sure, the best photos. And then the photographer is psyched. It's like, my photo's on Bostonist, my photo's on Chicagoist. So it's a great way for those editors to have all this photography, and then they can highlight cool moments and cool scenes from the city. And the photographers are excited because they get their content highlighted. Same sort of principle of aggregation as a platform for curation. Popularizing hashtags is great. If you know, here's a sample of one that we had for our incoming class, Tufts 2014. Maybe you're popularizing a hashtag of a new dorm, and you have new dorm as the hashtag. It's like, what's the coolest thing about the new dorm? And then you have 200 people using the hashtag to share their things, but you highlight the 20 that are the best that align with the message that you're trying to convey about the new dorm. And you can highlight that in a story or on your website, your Res Life site, whatever. Does anyone have any questions so far? I don't want to plow through. All right. So YouTube Direct is a service that YouTube created, which is something that you install on your server. And what it is it allows users to submit a video through a form on your website. It's a video that lives on their account. And what it does is it then submits it into a moderation queue. And if you approve it, it gets connected to a playlist via your YouTube account. So let's talk about this new dorm example. If you have people shooting videos of the new dorm, they're submitting it through YouTube Direct. It's on their YouTube account, but you can approve or reject whether or not it gets tied into your playlist that you've created from your YouTube account called New Dorm or whatever. So that could be a good way for sort of it's more active solicitation than sort of going out and finding, but you can then, from that pool of content you solicit, find and highlight the best of it. Google Moderator is an interesting tool. It's often used for sort of a Q&A thing, but you can also put out an idea, you can put out a question, and people can submit responses. And sort of like along the lines of I Can Has Cheeseburger, the community can then vote, thumbs up, thumbs down, just a good answer, good idea, bad idea. And that could be a way to also use to curate comments or ideas on a topic. What we've done with one of our news channels, Tufts E-News for a few years, is an idea that I blatantly ripped off from the old Atlantic Online, Atlantic Monthly Online. They had a feature called Flashbacks where they would take content from their archives going back decades to the 19th century that was newly relevant in light of current events. So let's say the war in Iraq started. Let's say there was an article from several decades ago that somehow touched on the ethnic conflict that's been simmering for decades. They would link back to that content because it was now relevant in light of current events. So we did that with our own archives. We would go back in our own archives for our news and find content that was evergreen, that had new relevance. Here's an example of some of our veterinarians talking about being mindful of your pets during the hot summer. We did this summer. We link back to the story from 2002. It was the content was still relevant, but we were able to highlight it in light of the fact that it was freaking hot this summer. Any questions? Okay. So once you have all this content, you found it, how do you share it? How do you publish it? How do you get it out there? There are a ton of services that have cropped up just around the idea of curating content. I'm not going to go into detail about them because a lot of them have some similarities, some differences, whatever, but I know that Storify and Curated By are two of the ones that are pretty popular right now. Mix is also really interesting. A lot of professional sports teams use Mix, pulling articles and tweets and things like that. The slides are going to be available online after if you want to have this list to reference at your leisure. But some of these have varying price points, whatnot. But I'm going to go, I prefer to sort of grassroots it a little bit, so I'm not going to go into detail about a lot of these. But they might be worth checking out if you're looking to use a service to help you accomplish these goals. So one thing that Google Reader allows you to do is publish directly from the reader. So if you find this content, like here is a tweet from one of our acapella groups, and I want to publish it to channels that I've selected, I can do that. The one thing that this doesn't allow me to do is add the context of supporting, you know, content or links or whatever, but I could set it up so that it can just directly go, bam, go to Delicious, bam, go to Twitter, go to Tumblr, whatever, which could be handy. So Yahoo Pipes is interesting. It's a way to sort of, I call it sort of like programming a VCR for content. You can sort of set it up and then have it roll. It's a little more aggregation-y, but I'll again quote Steve Rosenbaum, who said something I liked. He said that robots can be your friends, but don't let your users smell the metal. So something like Yahoo Pipes, you could really, really fine-tune the content that you're having it go out and find. But again, it's a robotic process, so you lose a little bit of it there. But it could be handy, whether as a curation tool in itself or to help you sort of pull in that content from the big wide web out there. Twitter is great because it offers a lot of different ways to organize your content, whether it's a Twitter list, a Twitter hashtag, or favorites. I'm really a big fan of favorites because favorites are just instant content for like your about page or your points of pride page, where if you're going through all your tweets or all your, you know, YouTube videos, YouTube also has favorites or Flickr. We'll talk about those more in a second. It's just instantly, here's the best content, that here's what people are saying about us. Bam, 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 bam. So Miro is a service that I first heard about from Corinne Jolie on her blog, Higher Ed Experts. And it's basically allows you to sort of bring together different YouTube accounts. So if you have a bunch of departments at your university who have YouTube accounts and they're creating content, you can select different accounts, pipe them into Miro, install it, set it up on your web server, and then you have sort of a cool front end for presenting a lot of different video content. Duke University is doing this right now with Duke On Demand. Again, you're curating accounts, you're not curating content, but it is a way to sort of rein in and highlight some of the content being created at your university. This is Magnify.net, which is the service that this guy, Steve Rosenbaum, I keep quoting, is the CEO of, and it's a video curation platform. It allows you to curate video via service and then incorporate it into your website. Cover It Live is a tool that I really, really can't say enough good things about. It's ostensibly just a live chat tool. If you wanted to host a live chat between, you know, your audience and a faculty member who has new research, you can just do that. But what you can also do is you can pull in tweets by user account, pull in tweets by hashtag. You can have it do it automatically, you can do it manually. But what it can really do is create a great integrated conversation where for the chat, you can moderate it, for the tweets, pull in the select ones. And around a specific topic, you can highlight this great conversation around it. What we did for when our acapella group, the Beelzebubs, were on NBC's The Sing-Off last fall, winter, we hosted a live chat during the finale. So we had a lot of people from all, you know, different aspects of our community logging on, connecting with each other, and alongside their live chat stream, we pulled in a lot of the relevant tweets from people who were excited about the Bubs being on national television. So it created this sort of really cool conversation that was coming from all different places, and we took an active role in facilitating and curating the elements of that conversation. I mentioned Flickr favorites briefly. Flickr favorites are great. If you have your tag in Flickr set up for your university's name, you see all the photos, the ones that you like, you click favorite, bam, you have a gallery of all these awesome, awesome photos that your members of your community are taking of your campus, of events at your university, whatever. And with the Flickr API, you can sort of mish and mash it a little bit to set it up and display it on your website. So, you know, whether you have a developer at your disposal or not, there's different ways that you can display this content. Really, really awesome visual content that you're not paying for. Same goes for YouTube and YouTube favorites. YouTube has a playlist creator tool so that you can feed in whether it's just the stream of your favorites or a specific playlist. And you can have it embedded, set up in a little embed that you can put on your website. The one downside to the YouTube playlist embeds is that it displays from oldest first, not most recent first. But if you have someone who could hack a little bit at your disposal, they could sort of hack at the API a little bit to get it to show most recent first. But otherwise, this is a great way to have sort of a cool jukebox of video content that you've curated from YouTube. This is what we did, again, when the Bubs were on the sing-off. We had 36 videos that we found on YouTube that people had taken at Bubs performances. So everyone's jazzed about the Bubs. We're driving content to this package. You can watch all sorts of performances of songs by them. So going more along the lines of content solicitation and moderation, Tumblr and Posterous are two blog products where people can submit not just text, but photos, video, different kinds of content, and you can bring it into a moderation queue that you can then review and then approve what you want to get published. Tumblr is really great. It's very popular. It's hip among the kids. But what I really like is about Posterous is that it's driven by email. So if you popularize an email address, you can say, hey, send your content about this to this email address, and then people can just submit it, and it goes right into the queue, or they can submit it via the web. So those are a couple of cool tools for soliciting content. So some of you might be a little bit concerned. We're talking a lot about other people's content, right? And I can understand people being a little bit nervous, like, it's not my stuff. I'm not sure what I can do or I can't do. You know, is this all legit? So a couple points about copyright, and maybe I should pay Steve Rosenbaum money. I've been using a lot of his material in his presentation. But he said a really good overview of the things to think about in the realm of copyright when you're curating content. You can link to anything that's on the web. If it's public, if it's there, you can link to it. If it's embeddable, you can embed it. But you can't violate any sort of copyright act. You can't remove ads that are part of the content that you're curating. And you have to understand that your content also abides by these rules. If you put a video on YouTube, there could be an alum out there who's curating the best content about your university and puts it on their blog and puts context around it. And that's just something to accept. When you put content out there, people are going to link to it and embed it and do whatever. But the other key rule of the road is respect. If you link to a blog and it's fair game to link to, but then that student writes to you and says, you know, I really don't want that blog post highlighted. I know it's on the web, but you know, I would feel more comfortable if you didn't really link to it. You got to be cool with that and be like, all right, that's totally fair, because this is about sharing and building community. So a big part of that is respect. So here are some examples of places where has done a good job of curating content on the web. New York Times topics pages, I think, do a really great job. Here's one that they had for the Gulf of Mexico oil spill this summer, where they have some text here and a photo that just sort of summarizes the situation and gives a good overview. And they have headlines around the web that aren't New York Times content. This is content from MSNBC, Wall Street Journal, but it adds context to the situation. And then here's their own content, New York Times coverage of the issue. So with all this content put together, they have a really good context around this topic. And it's content that's theirs, it's content that's not theirs, and then it's just text that is specifically designed for the purpose of providing context to this topic. /dot, some of you might be familiar with, pretty simple. They find the best news about technology on the web, and they post it there. IBM uses Tumblr, actually, for this blog, which is A Smarter Planet. And they set this up to highlight a specific aspect of their brand, which is to be instrumented, interconnected, and intelligent. So they just feature links to all sorts of interesting content that ties into that theme. So here's an article from Slate about the Kindle. Neither Slate nor the Kindle have anything to do with IBM. But by highlighting they're saying that this content ties into the theme of being interconnected, instrumented, and intelligent. And they're just trying to be, I know that the term thought leader, you know, people kind of cringe at that a little bit, but they're trying to say, we understand what it means to be instrumented, intelligent, and interconnected. And here's the content that we find that speaks to that message. And if they're trying to build their authority as representing that brand by curating this content from around the web that ties into that. The people who find the Kindle interesting and find it as a representative of being interconnected, instrumented, and intelligent, will then maybe connect to IBM on that level as well. That's their hope. YouTube has a blog called Citizen Tube, where they scour YouTube for the best citizen journalism video that is covering current events, and then they highlight it on this blog. So that's curation as well. Their goal is to communicate about current events. They're finding video from their own archives, from YouTube's archives, that tie into that and giving visibility to these citizen journalists. Discovery Channel did a cool thing where they popularized this hashtag #MyDiscovery, and they asked people to share their own sense of discovery of what's out there. And then they tell you that they'll highlight it not only on the web, but on TV as well. So for you as a viewer of Discovery, the idea of getting your tweet, your insight, featured not only on the web, but on TV is pretty cool. And they're selecting the best ones of what gets submitted to highlight in those places. This is an interior design curation blog called Crib Candy. And what they do is they just scour all sorts of other interior design blogs, and they highlight the best of what's out there, the best of what other blogs in their community about interior design are highlighting and publishing. So it's, you know, from all sorts of different sources. What they're in it for is just to raise the visibility of good quality coverage of interior design. That's what their goal is. And the Wooster Collective is a street art collective, and what they do is they highlight instances of street art all around. And they recently, I guess it was probably a few months ago, did some curation on YouTube. What YouTube often does is they have groups that will come and curate content on the homepage. One group they had recently was this group called Invisible People, which was about the plight of homelessness. So they invited this organization to come and curate all the content on the YouTube homepage. And it was all content that tied into the idea of raising visibility around the plight of homelessness. So this Wooster Collective, what they do is they curate the best content about street art. And they, you know, when they were doing this curation on YouTube a little while ago, they said something that I thought was a really good approach to thinking about curation. That they said, for us, the key to curation is curiosity. The best curators in the world, online and off, are curious people by nature. We're constantly wanting to be inspired and wanting to share what's inspiring us with others. So I think that, you know, we've talked a lot about you know, the process and whatnot, but really just having a curiosity about your own brand, taking advantage of the curiosity that other people have when they're exploring things through their content, and, you know, trying to inspire people through content. I like this approach because it, you know, we're trying to accomplish goals, you know, we have business we're trying to do, but, you know, content should be about being inspired, right? So trying to find the best of it, yeah, we want to accomplish our goals and do our job, but we also just want to engage and entertain people. We want to inspire them about our brand. So just to sum up, what are some of the things that you get out of curating content? You get authority. Again, to that point about being the authority on your own brand, just like IBM is trying to do. They have a brand they're trying to own. They're trying to speak to that audience so that's instrumented, intelligent, and interconnected. So by finding content that's out there and highlighting it, we become the authority on the brand messages that we're trying to convey. Information, by monitoring content and by really getting involved in the content community and those content influencers, you learn a lot. There was a tweet from a student that I found through the Tufts 2014 hashtag where she said, "I'm so excited to come to Tufts, I can't wait to go to the same university that Susan Wu went to." I'm like, who the heck is Susan Wu? I don't know who this person is. So I looked her up. Sure enough, she's a Tufts grad, and it turns out that she was one of the top 100 female entrepreneurs by Fast Company, and she's some, you know, really hot technology person. So I'm like, I would have never known that unless I'd been immersed in the content that my community was creating. And you find content, just like that Quidditch video. You know, we were sort of racking our brains trying to hook up with these students to get this video feature done. And they, you know, by being attentive to the content that was being created, we found the content that they had created around what they were trying to convey about their organization. And that did it for us. I wasn't going to be like, mine's going to be better. I'm going to create this video anyways, and that'll show them. I don't need to approach it that way. All I'm looking for is good content, right, that ties into what I'm trying to achieve. If I create it or if they create it, I really don't care. I just want the message out there. So if they're telling the story, if they're creating the message, I'm happy to highlight that. And community. By reaching out to those digital influencers, those content ambassadors who are out there, you don't know what you're going to find. You're going to build those relationships, and that could extend beyond the idea of content. You never know where those are going to go. And that, to me, is pretty powerful. So that's about it. I'm happy to take any questions.
Well, you referred to the institutional brand, and basically the brand you're referring to is kind of a sole institution. Mm-hmm. And
the microphone, actually.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I forgot to.
So at that, especially at my institution, you have different levels. I mean, I have my boss and my boss's boss, who may interpret that brand a little differently than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So
really?
I'm assuming that happens at your school. How do you actually deal with that discrepancy between the interpretation of the brand and how you present other people's content?
I mean, your mileage is going to vary at every institution. I think that, you know, obviously you're going to have buy-in from, you know, the people who you're reporting to accomplish that, unless you go by the, you know, ask, you know, for forgiveness before permission kind of approach. But, you know, I'm sort of talking about it in sort of broad, like, university-wide context, but you can also do this at a very sort of narrow level. One thought is, like, let's say you have pick your master's program. We have a master's program in humanitarian assistance. And if the people who run the Masters in Humanitarian Assistance program wanted to curate content to accomplish their goals of raising awareness about their degree program, they could curate content from, you know, articles and blog posts from other people doing, you know, humanitarian assistance or whatever, not necessarily at our institution. And that could go alongside content that we're creating about that degree program. And thereby, they're doing content curation for the idea of, you know, saying, this is what our program is all about, these are the things that we care about, you know, this is what we stand for. So, you know, to your question about, you know, how do you get buy-in for it, or how do you get those, make sure everyone's on the same page? It's hard to say. I mean, has anyone had experience with that of sort of like, you know, trying to get everyone on the same page with the brand and what that story is? You know, I think that at my institution, that isn't really a problem. The brand messages are sort of baked into our brain. It could be a matter of, you know, talking about it as a group and figure out, well, maybe it's a narrow thing. Maybe it's one message that you can all agree on. Maybe if you're, you know, internationalism and sort of the international perspective, that's really big at Tufts. If that's really big on your school and you can all agree about that, maybe that's some place to start. Instead of having it to be the end-all, be-all of every single message that our institution stands for, you can start at one place that everyone says, yes, this is what we're doing here, and go from there. Any other questions? Anything from start listening, start reading, start finding content, whether it's through Google Reader, something like NetVibes, Hootsuite. There'll probably be a whole session just about social media listening and monitoring, but it's about finding that content and not doing anything with it for a while, but just sort of reading it and seeing what people are producing, what's out there, what the tone of the content is like. That's the first thing I would recommend doing, is just immersing yourself in it and seeing what's out there. And then that'll give you a good sense of how you want to proceed. Maybe you'll do sort of the big overarching, everything about our university, here it is. Maybe it's one aspect of it. Maybe it's just student content. You'll find out from just sort of diving in and being like, what's here, how you want to proceed. Tim, is there anything from the internet? I aim to please. Any other thoughts or questions? So this is the URL where you can find the slides. It goes to a blog post that I'll be adding to. I have a link now to some links that I've curated on Delicious about content curation, so feel free to take a look at those. I'm on Twitter at Radio Free Georgie. This is my website too, so if you have any questions afterwards, I'm happy to talk. Thanks.